Welcome to the Talking Story Podcast, where we believe all of us can have a more purposeful and meaningful, and yes, an even more exciting life. Listen into inspiring stories about ordinary people who have done extraordinary things with their lives, through their hobbies, their passions, and their businesses. Join your hosts, father and daughter team, Bob and Kelsey, as they travel the world seeking out those whose stories inspire us to do things greater than what we imagined we could.
Well, welcome to the Talking Story Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Walaszewski.
I'm the host, Kelsey Walaszewski.
And today we have Kent Whitaker with us. And when I think of stories involving people I know that have gone through it, there is no story more trying, difficult, horrific than Kent's. I'm not going to give it away, but this is one where buckle your seatbelt. You're in for a very bumpy yet interesting ride.
Yeah, it's, oh boy, listeners are really going to enjoy this interview, but I want to set the stage as to why Kent came on the podcast in the first place, and that is that we have all struggled with difficult things. I mean, in my personal life, I remember just my darkest times going through my divorce and really wrestling with this, God, where are you, and why is this happening to me?
Yeah, and we all go through those, and that's the takeaway. I mean, as you're listening, not only do we want you to be thinking of what Kent went through, but applying it to what you have gone through or are going through, and realize there is hope, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
And then the other thing, once we do go through these really difficult times, oftentimes there's other parties in play. And when there's other parties in play going through a difficult season, for example, we'll just bring it back to my life, and that's now an ex-husband. But, you know, there's an aspect of how do I forgive someone who has hurt me? Or sometimes it's, you know, how, in a way, almost, how do I forgive God? Sometimes people put the blame on God and they're like, God, you let this happen. And because this happened, you're no longer a good God. And see ya, I'm out of here. This is ridiculous. So,
or waiting and saying, if the person who has wronged me will come to me and apologize and get down on their knees and say, I really blew it and I'm so sorry, then I will be ready to forgive. And probably 80% of the things in life, that didn't happen that way, very rarely. And that is one of the reasons why we have to keep that in mind as we think of what forgiveness looks like and why. And you said it, one of your questions that comes up, and again, I won't say what the answer is, but kind of why do bad things happen to good people? It's really a twofold thing. It's about forgiveness and going through rough times when you're just struck in life with something horrific.
Yeah, I just think living in such a, what I consider now, what world we're living in is almost a like a post-Christian world, because there's a lot of people, especially our young people, whose faith is dependent on the goodness of God. And so when bad things do happen, faith begins to crumble instantaneously. And that's why we, I believe, are watching so many people walk away from the church, walk away from their faith, walk away from Christianity. And I just think this podcast today addresses that, because Ken goes through a horror, an indescribable horror, which we will be getting to. And I just think it's what he's done since then to where he doesn't walk away from his Christianity. In fact, it brings him closer to Jesus. That's something that we don't recognize or see much in this world. And I just want, as a listener, for you, if you're struggling through difficult times right now, you know, our series this year is picking up the pieces. 2020 has been rough. We're not sure what the future of 2021, you know, holds for us either. It could be another rough year,
but we hope it's better.
but at this point, we are, many of us, picking up the pieces. And what we're hearing is that there are more divorces happening from 2020 because, you know, couples are who suddenly are forced to live together in close quarters for a long period of time, you know, there's unresolved issues happening, and you know, people have lost their jobs and livelihoods, and you know, just an uncertain future. And so many of us are asking these questions and going, how can there be a good God? So I just would encourage you to take a listen, open your hearts up to really what I believe is the message for each one of us through this interview. So folks, without further ado, we introduce Kent Whitaker, and stay tuned because we're going to be processing after the interview what he has to say. And then of course we'd love for you to join us on our Instagram, where we would love to process with you through direct messaging. You can email us. All of that will be in our show notes. So if you are really taking this to heart and need to wrestle with someone, we want to be here for you with that. So without further ado, you guys, Kent Whitaker.
Well, Ken, welcome to the Talking Story podcast. As you know, each week, Kelsey and I highlight an ordinary person making an extraordinary difference. And your life is extraordinary to the utmost degree. But before we get there, let's go back before December 10th, 2003. Who was Kent Whitaker? What was life like back then?
Hey, Bob, thanks for having me. First of all, I'm just a normal guy, just like everybody listening. I grew up in a very happy home. I was the oldest of four kids, and we went to church every week in Sunday school. I had a very happy home life, and I grew up, went to college, and when I got out of school, I married Tricia, and over the next 30-something years, we raised two boys, Bart and Kevin, who was 4 years younger. And for work, I was the chief operating officer of a large commercial construction company in Houston. And I would just have to say, I really enjoyed my life. We were a very happy family, and work was a lot of fun. It was challenging. I really enjoyed it. But that all came to a crashing halt on December 10th of 2003, when my whole world changed.
Well, of course, all of us have trials and tribulations. It sounds like your life, like you said, was pretty happy, pretty normal, raising kids, loving your wife, just having a great career. And of course, there were trials and tribulations, but nothing like you were about to experience on December 10th, 2003. Paint the picture. What did that day look like? Where were you heading coming back home? Tell us what happened.
I'll do that. But before we do, I wanted to let everybody know, because this is going to sound like I'm some kind of super Christian or something when we get into the story. And I just want everybody to understand that I'm not. I am a regular person, and I've wrestled with forgiving people all my life. I learned the large prayer in Sunday school, so I know that God wants us to forgive, but I really had a hard time doing it growing up, and I never could understand why. I mean, was it because I was not trying hard enough, or was there something wrong with me? And over time, I just really wrestled with forgiveness. But as far as the evening in question, our older son, Bart, called to say that he finished his finals and he wanted to go out and celebrate his upcoming college graduation. So we went out for a great dinner. And when we came home, my younger son, Kevin, opened the front door and stepped inside the house. There was a loud noise, and Tricia said, "Oh no." And then another loud noise. Now, Bob, Kelsey, I just want you to know that I've been around guns all my life, and in fact, I actually own 7 guns. But as strange as it seems, I didn't recognize those sounds. I mean, the idea that there might be an assassin in my own home was just too bizarre to consider. So I stepped up, looked inside the dark house, and I wondered, what's happening? Well, a man was standing there in a ski mask I don't know, maybe 8 feet away, very close. But it still didn't make sense to me. At the next moment, I was hit hard in the chest and spun around, and I landed back on the porch. And that's when I knew those noises had been gunshots, and there had now been 3 of them, 1 for each of us. Before I had a chance to warn Bart, there came a 4th blast from inside the house. Now, I don't know, you may have had to experience this, Bob. I know that some of your listeners surely have. But it's a very strange thing to realize that you might actually be dying. Me, I found that I was very calm and at peace with the thought. I just told God that if it was my time, I was ready, but to please protect my family. I called out to each of them, but got no answer, except for some quiet, wet coughs that were coming from Tricia. Now, I'd never heard those kind of coughs before, but instinctively I knew that they were the sound of someone trying to clear their lungs from filling with blood. Well, suddenly, the police were everywhere. 3 paramedics began working on me, trying to keep me alive. But no one would tell me a thing about my family until I overheard one policeman ask another one as they rushed in the house. He said, what do you want to do about the DOA? And that hit me like a ton of bricks, dead on arrival. That's how I learned that at least one, and I didn't know, maybe by then all of my family were dead. I began to shake and realized that I was going into shock. Well, Tricia and I were taken by 2 Life Flight helicopters to the Houston Medical Center, and Bart joined me a few minutes later by ambulance. He'd been shot in the arm, supposedly struggling with the shooter. I learned that they stopped working on Tricia mid-flight, and that Kevin had died almost instantly right inside our front door.
So at some point in time, you started to believe that, and this is what is a shock here, that this was not a random person in your living room, that this was a setup. Take the story from this point.
I was wrestling with that. I couldn't figure out why anyone would have done this. I didn't have any enemies that I knew of. And it seemed so surgical that it really, I couldn't figure out why this was happening. But when I was finally left alone in my hospital room that night, I really wrestled with my faith. And as you can imagine, my emotions were all over the place. But they always came back to a deep desire for revenge, because I just wanted to hurt this person because they'd stolen my entire life. And to be honest, I was pretty mad at God too.
And then, I mean, you're talking right now, you're wrestling. You're wrestling with your faith. I can only imagine how angry you are at God. I just would love to know, Ken, like, I mean, you're sitting there in the hospital bed with all of these emotions flooding in. Like, what did you do with that?
Wow, it was hard. Like I said, I was furious at God, not just for letting it happen, because I know I didn't have any control over that, but because he seemed to have lied to me for years. There's one of my favorite verses in the Bible, Romans 8:28, and I had used it often when I was comforting others. But when I tried to apply that verse to myself, I couldn't do it. The verse says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. And I wondered, how could that be possible here? Tricia, Kevin, and I, we all love God and we were called to his service. There wasn't any way. This had to be a lie. God could not take the murders of my wife and son and work them for good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm dumbfounded. I could only imagine how trying to apply that scripture in the reality of what just happened is tough. So, I mean, the next thing is, the question is, what are, the shooter, you know, you don't know who was behind the shooting, and the revenge is there. You want to take revenge. So, you just lost your wife. You just lost your son. Like, I guess take it from there. What did you do next?
Okay. Okay. As I was wrestling with this, trying to decide if I was going to start tearing pieces of the Bible out and throwing them away, I was wondering, where do you stop with that? So I was wrestling with, how do I resolve this? Because I knew I needed God now more than I ever had in my life. And I remembered that I had argued for years that faith in anything, whether it's evolution or whether it's trusting in Jesus for that first time, whatever it is, faith in anything requires an act of willpower. It has nothing to do with our emotions, because our emotions, they'll lie to us and they'll cause us to make bad decisions. Faith is choosing to believe something is true when all you can see is telling you that it's not. Now, for Christians, faith is when you know what the Bible says, like I did, and it doesn't seem to make sense, like it did that night, but you choose to believe it anyway because you trust God to be faithful in everything that He's promised, whether you understand it or not. And I wondered, was I going to be the man of faith that I challenged others to be? And there was really only one answer. As bad as I needed Him, I told God that I didn't know how He would do it, but that I trusted Him to somehow, somewhere with somebody, bring something good from the murders. And that decision completely changed the trajectory of the rest of my life. Because as soon as I settled that question in my mind, the first of two really strange things happened. A very specific word-for-word sentence came into my mind. And I can't explain this. I mean, this has only happened once before in my life. I just know what happened. Because, see, normally God speaks to me like He probably does with most folks. Sometimes I'll, quote, hear Him when I'm reading the Bible, you know, or maybe a verse will just pop out. Sometimes it's a small, quiet whisper when I'm praying. But that night, it was a specific word-for-word question. It was good. Now, what about the shooter?
So what about the shooter? Let's pick up the story there. You're obviously want to know and trying to think who hates you this much that they would kill your wife and one of your sons. They'd shoot you. Your other son's got shot in the arm. Who hates you this much?
Yeah, that was a good question. But when God asked me that about what was I going to do about the shooter, I realized that as strange as it sounded, I understood what He was saying. I think what He was saying was He was encouraging me for trusting Him in the Romans 8:28 thing, but was asking me if I was going to trust Him in the other hard things. Things like, vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
Mm-hmm. That's a biggie.
Yeah, that's a real biggie, because I saw where He was going with it. He was asking me to forgive this guy, and I knew I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. But the Bible tells us that with God, all things are possible, and that we can do all things through Christ. And it was really clear to me that He wanted me to forgive Him for some reason. So I said, I give up, God. I can't do this. Will You please help me? But if You really do want me to forgive Him, You're going to have to do all of the heavy lifting, because this is beyond my specs. I can't do this alone. And that's when the really, really, really strange thing happened, and I certainly can't explain it. Suddenly, what I can only describe as a warm golden glow flowed over me. It was kind of like a bunch of like a fog of tiny golden sparklers, and it just kind of flowed from my head to my feet, and then it was gone. And when it left, I was shocked to realize that all traces of revenge and hatred were gone. And it threw me. I didn't know what had just happened, because that certainly wasn't me 5 seconds earlier. Instead of all that hatred and the desire for revenge, which was all that I was thinking about, there was now a complete and total forgiveness for everyone involved. And Bob, it terrified me. I didn't know what was happening, but I knew that it was real. That it was so clear to me, it was so real. But why he chose to give me that instant forgiveness was a mystery. But then I didn't know why I was still alive. So there were lots of mysteries because I should have died that night.
So, I mean, not many people can get that. I mean, it sounds like the way you describe it is like this inside out forgiveness. Like it started internally and worked its way out and just a body sensation.
I have only heard of one other person tell me about an experience like this. And they described it the same way with the Golden Glow thing. And in that case, there was a reason for it. I didn't know what the reason was yet. But the next day, I began to see what he might be up to, what this miracle was all about. Because the police told me that Bart wasn't about to graduate from college at all. In fact, he wasn't even in school that semester. And he had now become their number one suspect for arranging the murders, they thought, to cover up failures in school. Now I know that he was seriously mentally ill, but at the time, nobody knew that back then. Back then, I didn't even believe for a minute that he was involved when they said that. I was so angry at them for not going after the real killer. Why were they pursuing this dead end? But I did know that Bart's faith was not as strong as Trish's or Kevin's or mine. And if he was going to be the actual focus of an investigation that might even turn into a trial one day, he was going to need someone in his corner, someone who would stick with him through everything, someone who would model for him the unconditional love that God has for all of us, even murderers. So when we went home from the hospital a couple of days later, I did so knowing that my son was a suspect and he might actually have been responsible for his mom's and his brother's deaths. But I came home without any feelings of fear or judgment. And that would have been impossible if God had not helped me reach an innocent forgiveness for everyone involved before I realized that it might even apply to my own son.
Can't that just boggles my mind. I mean, when I think of what you went through, and when I think of having to forgive someone in my own personal life, I think of a man who burglarized our home a number of years back. He was later caught. And I just think how difficult that was. Or we had an unknown someone, or maybe plural someones, who stole a motorcycle we owned. But these are so trite, so trivial comparison to what you've gone through with the murder of two of your family members. And really, you didn't have just your son Bart to forgive. You had two other people to forgive. The person who pulled the trigger and the getaway driver, was it instantaneous forgiveness for the other two as well? Or was it harder for those?
Yeah, no, it wasn't, Bob. And the amazing thing is that it has stayed to this day. It hasn't lagged at all. See, at that night in the hospital, I didn't know who was responsible. I didn't know about the other shooter. I didn't know about the getaway guy. I didn't even know about my son's involvement. It was a complete and total forgiveness for everyone involved. And it was a nameless, faceless forgiveness. It just covered everybody. And it has continued to cover everybody through all these years since.
Yeah, think of like the prodigal son, you know, of just that forgiveness that dad showed. For those, or not all of our listeners are familiar with the story, and we'll have a link in the show notes, but just where this son, I mean, he didn't commit murder, but he went and did things that were probably felt awful for the father, but yet the father forgave him. So can you kind of correlate maybe what God taught you through that and just the...
Oh, God, yeah, that struck me so strongly. Once I realized that Bart might have actually been somehow involved, I realized that, it's the same thing that happened to that guy in Luke 15, I think, is when Jesus, I think that's in the 15th chapter of Luke, I think is where Jesus told that story. But basically, a young man demands his inheritance early, right? And leaves home for a life of wine, women, and song, but blows through all of his money. And while he's gone, the dad, who still loves him, even though he clearly sees his folly, has been praying that he would come to his senses. And when he does, the dad restores him back into the family. And what struck me was that this is a parable. So it's a story about how God stands, how he loves us unconditionally, and how he forgives us, and how he restores us back into him when we turn back to him, because obviously the father in the story was God. And I realized that having received that unexpected gift of forgiveness on the night of the shootings, that would actually let me show Bart that kind of unconditional love. I could actually be the prodigal son's father in real life.
Hey, hey, friends. Mistakes are meant for learning, not repeating. Across the globe are too many factories making throwaway products from unsustainable materials made by underpaid and overworked staff whose lack of opportunity has been exploited for profits. Yasminita believes the best way to usher in a generation of conscious consumers is to demonstrate a better alternative. Their products must not only be produced ethically and sustainably, they must be beautiful. And so Yasminita wants to create offerings which people will choose, not just because they are eco-friendly or sustainable, but because they are better products. Tune in to learn more about Yasminita and their story on the Talking Story podcast in episode 7, titled How YouTube and a Sewing Machine Has Changed a Community. And to purchase Yasminita's beautiful, sustainable products, search by brand on moimoimarket.com, which is a one-stop shop for products of purpose. And that's right, Yasminita's beautiful bamboo flatware is on there. So if you purchase this week, you will receive a free Yasminita made shopping bag. Make sure you put the promo code in. So go to moimoimarket.com. Again, that's moimoimarket, spelled moimoimarket.com.
Well, Kent, it's been said that unforgiveness is like swallowing poison and expecting the other person to die. So if we forgive, then in many ways, it's really a gift back to ourselves. But still, it's also a gift, or it sure can be, to others. Now, as your story continues, Bart runs off to Mexico for 15 months before being captured and brought back for trial. Now, tell us what's happening and what's going through your mind, maybe even his mind, down in Mexico.
Well, when I learned that he had run away, I didn't know where he'd gone. I didn't know if I'd ever see him again. The police kept touching back with me from time to time. And if I'd heard from him, I would have told him. I'm a law and order guy, and while I love my son, you know, if he was actually responsible for this, it was a horrible crime. And I recognize that society has a responsibility to protect itself from people who go outside the norms like this, and that the police were trying to protect the other citizens. And so while it placed them on the other side of the board for me personally, I still was very much a law and order kind of guy. So I would have told him if I'd heard from him. I just never did.
Where's your relationship with, so your son did end up going to trial because he did get captured. And then how is you as a father who is, you know, definitely justice needs to happen, but also with that extension of forgiveness and, you know, loving your son through the consequences, really, it's the consequences of the choices he's made, but you're going to love and be there with every step. Can you talk us, like, did your son see that, or how did he respond to that forgiveness?
Yes. During the 15 months that he was in Mexico, he wrestled with a lot of things himself. And he actually told me that toward the end, he made himself sort of available without moving around, with the full expectation that he would eventually be captured and brought back to trial. I got to tell you about the first time that I saw him since they brought him back, because this is important for everyone to understand that you can forgive somebody, but that doesn't necessarily mean that reconciliation is going to take place. Reconciliation is when a broken relationship is repaired to some degree. And that doesn't always happen, because it requires the other person to not only accept the forgiveness, but to request or to ask to be forgiven, to acknowledge what they've done and accept responsibility for it. And when I got a call from the police department saying that they had arrested him and were bringing him back, they allowed me to see him through the glass and over the phone before they notified the news media, so that I could avoid some of that. Sometime when we have time, I can tell you how horrible it is to be the subject of a news story.
Oh, I can only imagine.
it's unbelievable. But anyway, the very first thing that he told me, we sat down and I said, "Oh my, you're looking good." And he did look good. He said, "Dad, I don't know why this happened, but I am going to do everything in my power to make this go away as fast and as painlessly as possible." And I understood what he was saying, that he was saying, "I don't know if this is being recorded. It probably is. I don't know if the recording is useful in a court of law. I don't know. So I'm not going to say I did it and I'm sorry." But what he did say, and by the way, he has later when we were later on, he did that. But at that point, I understood completely that he was confessing and saying that he was responsible and that he was going to plead guilty. And so that this would be as painless as possible for all the rest of the family.
Kent, Governor Abbott, as I understand it, and you can pick up some of the details here, had never stepped in for when someone was assigned an execution in the state of Texas. But with about an hour to go, as I understand it, before Bart was to be executed, he did actually step in. Is that correct? Can you explain what happened here?
Yeah, I can. This is a miracle in itself. First of all, 11 years passed from the time that he was convicted of murder and given the death penalty as a result of there's a what they call a law of parties, which says that anybody involved with a murder, whether you were the trigger person or whether you were just there, you could be tried for murder. And they chose to try him for murder. Capital murder includes the possibility of the death sentence, which he received. So 11 years from that time passed. And during that time, a lot of very positive things happened. He became known as person who he would be a oil and water kind of guy. When things would break out, he would calm them down with the inmates and with the guards, and both sides got to know him and trust him. He helped several people get their GEDs and go on and get their high school diplomas. He helped some inmates on death row that couldn't speak English very well. He spoke Spanish and he taught them English. And on top of all that, he decided that he wanted to get his bachelor's degree. He told me, he says, "Dad, I don't know how we can do this since death row inmates don't have access to computers or phones or television or even really a real library." But he says, "I want to try to get my college degree and finish what I lied to mom about the night that she died. So we found a school that would allow him to graduate by mail. And he ended up getting a summa cum laude diploma. And then he went out and said, I want to get a master's if I can find one. So he applied to Cal State, and they had a distance program for prisoners mostly. And he ended up getting his master's from Cal State. So there were a whole lot of things that he had done during the 11 years that he'd spent on death row. And when his execution date was announced, at that point, we put together a file of all of these things, all of the letters. I mean, we had letters from three guards saying he needs to be commuted because he will be an asset to any institution he goes to. I mean, they weren't talking about, you know, letting him go free. They were talking about commutation to life in prison. So, the parole board votes 2 days prior to an execution date. And so we presented that file of things that Bart had done, and they voted 2 days before his execution unanimously to recommend a commutation to life in prison. And that had never happened. A unanimous decision had never been brought down by the parole board. And it was extremely rare to have any kind of commutation. The last commutation in Texas was 10 years earlier. And in the 20 years, I think, since that one, only three others had happened. So commutation from the death penalty in Texas is extremely rare. And this was a unanimous suggestion. Now, the governor didn't have to follow it, but he chose to. And with it was literally 30 minutes before they started the drip and the needle to kill him. He announced in a news conference that he was granting a commutation to life in prison.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. What a story. So he's now in Texas, still in Texas prison, and just being a blessing for those that he's rubbing shoulders with. Is that the current state of, and then how often do you get to see him?
Well, it isn't exactly how it is now. We found out some things that weren't part of the news conference. When you're on death row, you're given a classification, class level 6 or something like that. But anyway, basically, it's solitary confinement. Every person on death row, including Bart for 11 years, is locked inside a single cell and only comes out 3 times a week to have rec and to shower, and for 2 hours every week if someone comes and requests a visit. So that was the condition he was in on death row. And when he was commuted, the expectation, including from the Texas Departments of Corrections, was that he would go directly into a program to prepare him for reinsertion into general population in the prison system, where he would have an opportunity to have a job and to teach and to have community dinners and have access to televisions and an occasional phone call. But in the nearly 3 years since the commutation has happened, the prison system has never reclassified him. And I just, you can make the conclusions that you like, but his file apparently has a tag on it that says that he will never be released from solitary confinement for the rest of his life. That was not what we expected at all.
Understand. You know, we're running out of time, Kent. This has been a fabulous interview, and your story is just beyond the pale. But I also want to just tell our listeners right now, they're probably saying, oh, you need to ask. I need more information. That you wrote a book called Murder by Family. I'm sure it's available on Amazon. Someone can get that and order that book. But I think we need to wrap it up with this one last question, because this is probably the biggest takeaway. We've heard you talk about instantaneous forgiveness. And I know we have listeners right now. We've all been hurt, but we've got some listeners right now who have been really hurt. They've been abused by an uncle. They've experienced something so deep in their past and so hurtful that they've just said, I will never forgive. I hate that person. I hate that person. I will never, ever forgive them. And yet right now, as they're hearing your story, they're saying, okay, if he can forgive, I can. But he talked about instant forgiveness. That's impossible for me. I just want some kind of forgiveness. So last question for those listeners who've been greatly hurt and wronged, what advice do you have for them in this very important area of how to forgive?
The most important thing, most important insight that I've gotten from my journey was what happened the night of the shootings. And I realized that forgiveness isn't something that we can do by ourselves if we just try harder. We need God's help to do it. It may be so hard because it's so godlike, and we're not God, and we need his strength to do it. So I think what the most important thing would be is to recognize that if you want to be faithful to what Jesus calls us to do, which is he tells us we have to forgive those who hurt us, then you have to realize that you need help. And the help I would suggest is that you write a letter to the person, whether you send it or not, listing everything that they've stolen from you. And I've done this with the shooter and with Bart. And when you get to the bottom, say, you took all of these things from me, but I choose to forgive you, and then sign it. Now, signing it makes it a promise to yourself. You don't have to send it, but it is important that you list everything so that you can forgive it. You can't forgive what you don't acknowledge. And if you can't write that letter yet, pray, God, change me from the inside. I want to be faithful to you, and I can't do this. So change me, change my heart so that I want to forgive. And just pray that over and over and over until you wake up one morning and you realize that you can. And then you write that letter.
That's such a beautiful, practical thing to do, Kent. I know my dad said that was the last question, but I'm going to have one more question for you. But so I feel like this interview's kind of been two parts, one on the forgiveness aspect, and then the second part where you started off on the Romans 8:28. And I just think that Romans 8:28, for those that don't know it, is for all things work together for the good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And now what happened to you was just horrible. And I just think of a listener that maybe is going through something that was really terrible in their life, or currently going through something really terrible. And they're like, God, where are you? Like, I thought we were on the same team here, yet I've experienced this horrible, horrible event. Now you're 14 years later, looking back at what's taken place, you know, experiencing this beautiful sense of forgiveness. But can you maybe tell the listener or encourage the listener in just what you have learned from your journey and what Romans 8:28 now means to you? I know you talked a little bit earlier about it, but I have to think, like, the reason I ask this, I'm just going to preface this, is a person reached out to me and just is struggling. They're actually in Kenya, Africa, and they're going through a horrible thing with the whole COVID and just starvation. And they literally are just struggling. Where do we find our food? And he just texted me and he goes, Kelsey, I don't understand how something so bad is coming from a good God. And that's where he's honestly at. And I just have to think that was probably at one point, maybe in the hospital bed, of going, God, why did I thought we were on the same team. Why is something so bad happening? And here you are 14 years later. So what could you tell the listener? 17 years later. What could you just encourage us listening in, you know, why do bad things happen to good people?
You know, first of all, there aren't any good people.
That's true.
God, excuse me, God alone is good, right? I mean, yeah. Jesus cleared that up to the rich young ruler or whatever. But I know what they're saying. So I live my life better than these people. Why is this happening? And all I can say is we live in a fallen world. And until Jesus returns to put it back to right, Satan has some power here. He doesn't have total control. Nothing happens but what God allows it to happen. That's what I truly believe. It passes through his fingers before it comes to us. And if it passes through his fingers, and if we truly believe that God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, then we've got to believe that he is going to be faithful in Romans 8:28, and he is going to take it, whatever it is, and work it for good for his plan. Now, we may never see what that good is, but that's not promised to us. What it's promised is that he will never leave us or forsake us, and that he will restore what the locusts have taken from us. And it's always a matter of willpower to show faith. And we just have to stand firm and say, I don't understand it. I don't understand why, but I believe you and trust you, even in the midst of all of this, that you're a good God. And like Job said, you know, said, though he slay me, I shall praise him. That's our call. Our job is to be faithful in trusting him when we can't understand.
Kent, those are great, great words to end this podcast on. We are taping this just at the very end of 2020. This podcast will air, though, in 2021, a year that we all hope will be a much, much better year for all of us. And our theme for this year, or at least the beginning of this year, is picking up the pieces. You have been a fabulous guest because you have picked up a lot of pieces. You and your wife, Tanya, have a successful ministry where you get a chance to tell this story and encourage people in forgiveness. So this is just it's another reminder that if you can do it, so can our listeners. So can Kelsey and I, that we can all pick up the pieces, go through the difficult times, and find that there is light on the end of the tunnel. Kent, thank you so much for being our guest on the Talking Story podcast.
Oh, it was so much a pleasure, Bob. Kelsey, thank you. Blessings to y'all, and let's do hope that 21.
Amen. Blessings, our brother. Well, thank you, Kent. And his story is just, it's amazing. It's shocking. And I just cannot imagine being in his shoes. As I said in one of my questions, when our home was burglarized back in Colorado, that has to be in the top five most difficult things I've ever gone through. And I think, comparison to Kent's, it's not even close. He would even say, I'm sure he wouldn't say, but because he's so nice, but if he had to rank it, it would never even show up on his list of things he has to work, you know, for me, thinking of the burglar and he stole my wife's, you know, rings and necklaces and a jewelry box of yours, Kels. You know, it was a terrible time for me to have to think somebody came into our home and stole. It is nothing, you know. But I know right now, and I said it, we have someone listening who is, their world was rocked. 2020, it rocked their world. Before 2020, there's something horrific that happened to them. They were fill in the blank, something happened. And they're just, this has been a painful reminder that they have not dealt with it, not in the way that Kent has. So we trust, maybe you need to listen to the podcast over again, and maybe over again and over again, just to be reminded that how important forgiveness is. To swallow poison and expect the other person to die is not what unforgiveness is an awful, awful thing. Forgiveness is good for us. It's good for our soul. And realizing that, yes, all things do work together for the good of those that love the Lord.
And in theme with our picking up the pieces this year, I mean, in order for us to pick up the pieces and get back to life, and if there's unforgiveness still in our hearts, it's going to be hard to get back to a good life and a normal life, like you said, if there's still poison in our hearts. And so I love what Kent brought to the table, just the practicality of it, of just take a piece of paper and write down everything that has been taken from you. It could be a literal sense, like where you said for you, it's been a burglary. It could be, you know, a Kent's sense, like it's his family. And it could be a emotional sense. Maybe there were things that were taken from you that aren't physical, but you emotionally or spiritually feel robbed or drained. And I think just writing that down, and then at the end, I forgive you. But then it needs to be internal, which I just think is such a cool part of Kent's story, of where he was laying in that hospital bed and recognizing where his faith, what his faith played into this whole story of just going, okay, I have to trust you, God. That's what faith is, that even in the midst of this craziness, this horrific thing, that you are still God. And I don't understand this, but I need you to help me. And then in that, he started to realize, I need to figure out how to forgive the person who did this. And I just think that is just huge for each one of us to get to that point of going, okay, I understand that this is something that I need to do. And I think it's amazing too that, as he described it, he got a physical feeling that it was kind of this.
He only found one other person in his life, and he shared this story many times, that he's experienced something similar, almost a glow, a physical sensation.
And for me, I don't think in my struggles in life, and as I've sought to forgive and to have the power to forgive others, it hasn't been that. It
hasn't been a glow, not for me either.
But yeah. I have recognized it's been a heart change. And I think for me, it's probably been a consistent, and I'm a journaler where I've kind of had to write down like, Lord, please help me forgive this person. And, you know, I wake up the next day and I'm like, gosh, I still feel resent. I still feel anger. And I still sometimes wish bad things upon this person. So God, I'm still not there yet. So please help me forgive. And then I feel like in the consistency of doing that and wanting forgiveness and asking God to forgive, there has been a slow change to where I can now see on the flip side that God has allowed me to find, one, his forgiveness for me, that I've really sought out, wow, God, you have forgiven me. And then because of that, I am able to show forgiveness to these other people. And I've seen a heart change in me to where I don't wish bad things upon the people who have hurt me and have offended me. And it's been hard. It's been a journey in my life. For me, it wasn't instantaneous. So I want to encourage the listener that if you don't have that experience that Kent described, it doesn't mean that I think God works with each one of us in different ways. And so just to be so persistent in going, God, this is what I want, but this is the realness of my heart. This is where I'm at, but this is what I want. And that transformation will come from the inside out. It's not a force. Like I'm going to forgive this person, because if we try to do it outward and then make that internal, we're going to just explode. We're going to be a ticking time bomb, because if we haven't dealt with the issues of our heart and we haven't seen a heart change, then we're just suppressing what we're feeling, and it's going to come out again eventually and probably do more harm than good. Mm.
There's a very good chance while you're listening, you're thinking not only of the pain that you've experienced, but there's someone else you know that's gone through some significant pain. If you think this would be a blessing to them, please share it. As always, subscribe. You might want to pick up a copy of Kent's book, Murder by Family. We're not a book distributor. We don't have any way to do that, but I'm sure just going to Amazon and typing that in, you could get it through Amazon. And also in the show notes, Kent is made available several items about forgiveness. And of course, if he's one that's had to process it, and so we encourage you to take advantage of that it can be a blessing to you or someone who's gone through difficulty. Once again, thank you for listening to the Talking Story podcast, and we will catch you next week.
Thanks for joining us today on the Talking Story podcast. We hope you feel encouraged and inspired. Be sure to visit our show notes for more information and find us on social media at the Talking Story podcast. Your hosts, Bob and Kelsey, want to hear from you. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. Oh, and big mahalo to our sponsor of today's podcast, Moi Moi Market, a one-stop shop to purchase products with purpose. We truly believe you have it in you to change the world too, and to make an amazing difference in the lives of others.